I'm Robin Young. It's here and now from St. Paul.
Here's a little news flash for those reporters and commentators. I'm not going to Washington to seek their good opinion. I'm going to Washington to serve the people of this great country. I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities. I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
Well, the XL Energy Center here in St. Paul received a real jolt after Sarah Palin's speech last night accepting the Republican vice presidential nomination. The reviews from both sides of the aisle, at least for delivery, have ranged from home run to grand slam. Karl Rove writes in the conservative Wall Street Journal opinion page that Palin could make the difference in this tight election. Gloria Steinem calls her the wrong woman with the wrong message and says McCain might have picked her out of change envy. Well, to start, we want to check in Alaska, Governor Palin's home state. Matt Zenzi is there. He's editorial page editor for the Anchorage Daily News. Matt, how did they react in Alaska last night?
Well, Sarah Palin's a very popular governor here. Her approval ratings have been as high as 90%. They're in the high 70s or 80% range now. And as you might expect, people who think she's done a great job as governor were very pleased with her performance. The Republican establishment here is pretty alienated from her during her rise to power and fame here. They are probably grinding their teeth, but the average person is probably pretty happy.
Well, you know, we have Michael Carey here as well. He's a host of Alaska Public Television's Anchorage Edition and also a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. So, Matt, just hold on one second because Michael's here with us in St. Paul. And, you know, people have heard that Sarah Palin did just take on the Republican establishment in Alaska, but some thought that was just mythology. You and Matt say it's not.
I think the important thing to realize is sort of the question of who and how. Randy Riedrich, who's the chairman of the Republican Party, who's right here in the building, lost his job because of her protests of his behavior at the Oil and Gas Commission. She defeated an incumbent governor who was one of Alaska's important families and defeated him decisively. And right now, when I hear complaints about her, they are mostly from conservative Republicans. This doesn't make sense to people elsewhere. I think also it's fair to say that one of the things she's done, she's not very interested in the traditional establishment, and they don't have her private phone number as far as I can tell, and this seems to annoy these people who've had special access to power for years.
Well, now, Matt and Michael, hold on one second, because we're joined by Karen Tumulty as well. We're trying to see how many people we can squeeze into our little cubicle here on Radio Row. Karen, you know, is senior political correspondent for Time magazine. Karen, where do you think we are after last night's speech and the Sarah Palin trajectory?
Well, I think it was absolutely a good, strong, solid speech. She has electrified the conservative base, which is no small achievement given how unenthusiastic they were about John McCain. And I think with this speech, we saw her sort of pivot to her next job, which is to bring on board that crucial component of women, and particularly married women, who were so key to George Bush's victory 4 years ago. Now, The Republican strategists I've talked to have said, you know, these are not women necessarily. They're moderate women. They're not women who are going to agree with her on all the issues, but that they are hoping that they will really relate to her thoroughly modern and her thoroughly complicated life story.
But, Karen, I want to ask you, it would seem that the other job that she's just taken on is the person who's going to throw some red meat. As we welcome Kansas Senator Sam Brown back to our cubicle, move down, clean cup, as they say in Alice in Wonderland. Senator Brownback, welcome to Here and Now,
Thank you.
And Karen Tumulty was...
I get to sit here next to one of my favorite journalists.
Okay. Well, let's hope so after the next few minutes.
It'll remain
And also
way.
Meet Michael Carey from Anchorage Daily News. And on the line we have Matt Zenzi, who's in Alaska at the Anchorage Daily News. And Karen was just saying that it seemed after last night that that Sarah Palin really fulfilled at least one of her jobs, which was to appeal primarily to married women, you were saying, Karen. But I was about to ask, and I'll ask you, Senator, one of her jobs also seemed to be to throw out some red meat. It's funny, I'm reminded of Fred Thompson's comment earlier in the week that she's the only candidate who can field dress her own moose.
Yeah.
But did you know,
properly. Anybody could do it, but you got to properly.
But I'm wondering, it certainly seemed effective last night, all the jabs at Obama and Biden. But is that also, is that maybe a slippery slope? Maybe too much red meat.
Yeah, no, I mean, of course it is. And what you got to do is lay out what it is that you're going to do. But that's what John McCain does tonight. So last night is really to, I think, to take on the Obama-Biden ticket, which is a very hard left ticket, and set on those policies. And to dissect those and to go at those directly. And then John McCain lays out tonight, okay, here's what we're going to do on energy. Here's what we're going to do on security. Here's what we're going to do about health care. Here's what we're going to do about a variety of issues. And so I think that's how you hit it back and forth.
Were you at all disappointed? You are very much in line with Sarah Palin when it comes to abortion, for instance. You are core conservative against any form of abortion. But she
other
never...
than life of the mother.
Oh, all right. With that exception, I don't think is even
she's
for
there
that
too.
Exception.
No, she,
is
yes,
she?
She is.
Okay.
Yeah.
But she didn't mention right to life. She didn't mention that phrase.
Yeah, she didn't need to. She's living it. I mean, five children, one's with Down syndrome. That's the policy she stood for. I thought that was wise to not talk about it and just live it. That's the best message you can do.
Michael Carey, bring you in again from the Anchorage Daily News. You know this candidate well. How much did she make her personal values a part of her leadership in Alaska? When she was running for governor, she said that she was only going to be pro-abstinence and going to be against sex education in schools. But did she act on that as governor?
Well, one of the interesting things about Sarah Palin is she ran much more conservatively than she governed, I think it's fair to say. For example, I noticed in the New York Times, and Reed Dowd called her a zealot, and that really isn't the case as the way she governed, as unpopular as her views may be with somebody. She took three or four big issues, oil taxes, a gas line, and ethics, and made them the state ethics, and made them the center of what she wanted to do. And as a matter of fact, a number of Republican legislators were very, very unhappy with her late in the session because her failure to address an abortion issue in a way that they hoped it would be addressed. For myself, I saw it as her being unwilling to take on an issue that was just going to lose.
Well, Matt Zenzi, there in Anchorage in Alaska, how does it square that she's taken on ethics but is herself the subject of an investigation? We know the bipartisan legislature there has hired an investigator to look into allegations that Palin and her husband tried to get her former brother-in-law, a policeman, fired. How serious is this?
Well, it's definitely a blemish on her record as the clean governing reformer. It's interesting that she went ahead and filed an ethics complaint against herself this week in order to try to preempt the legislature's investigation and turn the case over to the State Personnel Board. And her aide, who is on tape, saying, "I speak for the governor with these concerns about this trooper," he has refused the deposition that he was scheduled to give to the legislative investigator. So it's getting messy here at this end, and it may be something that tarnishes the rose, as it were, for her and her image as an ethical reformer.
Well, and Sam Brownback, Senator, if I could ask you, and I know we need to make good use of your time because you're going to be whisked away soon.
But, no, you've got good people here.
Well, and they may want to ask you a question as well, but do you worry, you know, so many questions this week about the vetting process, that it was so last minute that she was chosen, that there may be more surprises down the road. Are you worried about that?
It's always a concern anytime you're trotting somebody out on the national scene for the first time because they get a level of scrutiny that they haven't had previously. Although I think really these items that have been brought up thus far are not in the major league category of derailing somebody. And I wish people would also look at the reform agenda because being from a relatively low population state as well myself,
Kansas.
And if you take on the political machinery, you're taking on personal people that you know and that know you and that the political apparatus is centered around them and not around you. This is a tough fight. It's like a real neighborhood brawl, Hatfields and McCoys, and it's even within her own party. I give her a lot of kudos for that, because that's a tough fight.
Karen, I see you gazing over at, you are his favorite journalist, so is there something you'd like to ask the senator?
Well, I do wonder, I mean, how nervous Republicans are, because the fact is, I mean, it's very clear that she did not get the kind of vetting that, you know, that generally goes into these sorts of decisions, that it appears to be a fairly last-minute decision that is either going to reflect very well or poorly on John McCain. And from what I understand, Alaska is now essentially crawling with reporters. So whatever vetting wasn't done then is
and
about to do now.
And there are enough there already,
it's
right?
It's the new tourism.
He says it's the new tourism.
So, I mean, how nervous are people about that in terms of the kinds of things? That
some, Karen, because it's just this is the first time trotting out on the national stage. You know, Joe Biden, you trot him out. Look, he's been out here for years. And so we've scoured this guy, and we found some things in the past, and those had scarred on. So there's some at that place. But I really think McCain thought at this point he had to shake the cycle up. All the attention was on Barack Obama. It's historic. It's a minority running for president. And it's, I can't get in the story. Now he's in this story, a historic vice presidential pick. And she happens to be spunky. And just this, for me, from a small town, she just really reminds me of the folks I grew up around that are out here in thoroughly red in red America and saying to big, deep, blue city America, look, we're still here and we're fighting.
But do you worry that spunky, charismatic, certainly terrific speaker, but, you know, so her critics might say she criticized Obama's speech for just being rhetoric and Obama for just being rhetoric. Some might lob the same criticism at her. The New York Times writing a piece today saying that, you know, sure, she's run the state, but hasn't had experience with tough budgets like other states have, and the federal government certainly has, Alaska swimming in oil money. So do you really think this is the person you want a heartbeat away from the presidency, Sam Brownback?
We typically elect governors, not senators, as you know. This will only be the third time in U.S. history that we elect a sitting senator to the presidency. And being a senator, I always kind of, well, I don't think that's right. I think they ought to elect senators. But people like the executive experience. And so actually she's coming more from the more typical spot that we take executives for the country, and the other three are not. She needs some foreign policy work. She's worked on some with Canada and having that experience. But, you know, John McCain's one of the most experienced. And I think that's where you want the experience on foreign policy is in the number one slot.
Well, I've got about a minute left. What do you need to hear from John McCain tonight that you haven't heard?
You know, I've heard a lot of it. What I think we need to hear tonight and give to the American public is the priorities for this fall. I think it needs to be energy. I think it needs to be what we're going to do on health care. I think it needs to be what we're going to do to reform Washington. I also think he's got to be hopeful and optimistic. American people want to be hopeful and optimistic. That's what Obama has really tapped into. That's that Reagan-esque piece, and I think that's what John McCain needs to tie into tonight, too.
Kansas Senator Sam Brownback. We also have Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine here, Michael Carey, host of Alaska's Public Television Anchorage Edition and a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. His colleague, Matt Zenzi, editorial page editor for the Anchorage Daily News, is there in Alaska. Matt, we're going to come back to you. Please stay there. We're going to be with all of you after a one-minute break to keep taking a look at last night and this electric speech from Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. What about the issues? Did she tap into the issues as much as she really got the crowd going with wonderful rhetoric and eloquence? Back in 1 minute, here and now. I'm Robin Young. It's here and now back in St. Paul, Minnesota, where Kansas Senator Sam Brownback just left the table. He's been whisked away to other appointments. We were happy to have him here, and we're thrilled to still have with us Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine, Michael Carey of the Anchorage Daily News, and on the line from Anchorage, Matt Zenzi, editorial page editor for the Anchorage Daily News. And Matt, I want to bring you back in here, and I'm going to ask Michael as well, what did she say last night that resonated with you, that was new, that you hadn't heard before, as someone who really covered her? And Michael's nodding his head. And Matt, what was missing? Just a little bit of that from Matt first in Anchorage.
Well, what surprised me was how enthusiastically she embraced the traditional Republican or the traditional vice presidential role of attacking the opposition. Yeah. Here she is known as a much more nonpartisan figure. My first exposure to her, as a matter of fact, up close and personal in the gubernatorial race, was she gave a talk to a Democratic lunch group, very small setting. She was very respectful of her opponents, spoke well of them all, except the incumbent governor that she was running against, the Republican governor, and really charmed the crowd with a kind of a nonpartisan approach, politely disagreeing with them. She has embraced the, you know, the vice presidential attack dog role with an enthusiasm that I think is unfamiliar to us here in Alaska.
Well, Michael was nodding his head. Let's listen. We have just a little bit. Here she is, and it's cut five, you guys back in Boston. Here she is speaking about Barack Obama's comment of a while back that people in small-town America cling to guns and religion, bitter about losing their jobs. The comment he made in San Francisco. Let's listen.
I might add that in small towns, we don't quite know what to make of a candidate who lavishes praise on working people when they're listening, and then talks about how bitterly they cling to their religion and guns when those people aren't listening. We tend to prefer candidates who don't talk about us one way in Scranton and another way in San Francisco.
Boy, Michael Carey here with us in St. Paul. Your colleague is saying that that's somewhat unusual, but she delivered those zingers as if she'd done quite a few of them.
I felt that those were inserted by the smart guys from Washington, D.C., who have surrounded her and don't allow us to talk to her. The Anchorage Daily News hasn't talked to her in almost a week now, and we don't get our phone calls returned. But that's a private complaint. Yes, as Matt outlined it very well, she has not been a partisan figure. And, in fact, the legislation that is most important to her would not have passed without the help of the Democrats in the legislature. And on her oil and gas legislation, on her gas line legislation and ethics legislation, the biggest complainers and stumbling blocks were Republicans.
Karen Tumulty, you're nodding.
Well, I'm actually wondering how well this wears in the long term. I mean, I think we got a hint a minute ago from Senator Brownback that, you know, he had some concerns that maybe last night was going a little bit over the top. These Republican conventions are very much red meat affairs. Think about how they went after John Kerry 4 years ago. 92 was certainly a high water mark of angry conventions. But I really do wonder if this, in the long run, if this attack dog role is how Sarah Palin should be selling herself to the country, given the fact that, you know, her job here is much broader, and it's to reach constituencies that John McCain cannot get to by himself.
And you mentioned one of them earlier, which is married women. I want to ask about the gender questions. You know, Republicans are saying that Palin has been criticized for her choice to be a governor and a new mom and now be a candidate and a new mom. But top Hillary Clinton aides have been saying today that they reject that thinking, and it was uber-conservative talk show host Laura Schlesinger who's been the biggest critic. She said, "I'm stunned to find out that Republicans couldn't find a competent adult female with grown children," because she, you know, believes that despite her own working outside of the home, that others should stay at home. So I'm wondering, is this something that the Republicans are trying to throw out to see if it sticks, or is this something that's really in the wind?
You know, this is sort of the private conversation that I think women are having all over this country. But I do think that as journalists, as commentators, I just don't feel like this is a place where we ought to go. I mean, everybody
but
makes...
But our journalists, it just feels to me that I see it written about, and I see people saying, critics on the left, but I'm not hearing the critics on the left say this.
I mean, like I saw, for instance, Sally Quinn of the Washington Post wrote a column that, you know, I found a little perturbing because I could not imagine the same column being written about the choices that had been made by a candidate who happened to be a father, not a mother.
So it is coming from the left.
It is coming, but I don't even think of I think
left, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's coming from a journalist that you heard from.
Could I answer something?
Please,
ask
Mike.
Interject something is the word I'm looking for about the speech. I wrote a blog item that will appear today in the Daily News that was generally a favorable review. At the end, I said, "The early reviews of Sarah Palin's performance are favorable. Alaskans expected nothing less." I didn't think she was particularly strong on the policy questions, but that's not what she was there for. I wanted to mention, I thought there was one really stumbling kind of moment that I found unsettling, and that was the reference to Harry Truman. Now, I've talked to friends from Kansas City, and they tell me Harry Truman always winds up in everybody's speeches. But the fact of the matter is Harry Truman only became president because the president of the United States died. And I just found that very awkward.
Given let's say it, you know.
Well, McCain's age, questions about his health, all that stuff.
Well, and as you said, this was just the beginning. You felt it was weak on policy issues. The Democrats are already saying she never mentioned health care, didn't mention jobs, well, except in passing.
She talked a lot
jobs.
About her biography, yeah. A lot about her family, a lot about John McCain. And I thought at some point she sort of used him as a staff to lean on. And not a lot about, I mean, I don't know, what is the vice president expected to do? And I don't know if it's fair to say that she should have given a big policy. She was introducing herself to the country and largely and did.
Well, and they seem, at least early reviews, as you said, seem to have said, maybe someone we'd want to know. Michael Carey, host of Alaska Public Television's Anchorage Edition, a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. Also, Karen Tumulty from Time Magazine. And from Alaska, Matt Zenzi, editorial page editor for the Anchorage Daily News as well. And thank you all so much. We hope to have you back because this is just the beginning of this new chapter of the presidential campaign. Thank you all so much.
Thanks.
And stay there because we'll be back after the news. Meet a sheriff from Massachusetts who has reinstituted chain gangs. He's here at the convention as well. Back after the news, here and now. I'm Robin Young in St. Paul. It's Here and Now. Several decades ago, convention speeches were laced with pledges to fight crime. Well, today, the talk is of fighting al-Qaeda. But Massachusetts Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson would like to see issues like crime and its many causes back on the front burner. He tried to charge inmates $5 a day for room and board, but a class action lawsuit put that on hold. It's in the courts. He succeeded in banning TV, tobacco, and weightlifting in the county prison system, and he instituted chain gangs. Now, when they were first proposed 10 years ago, then NAACP New Bedford President Lee Carlton said the only people brought chained to these shores were Africans, so anytime you chain anybody, it touches a nerve. And it has. Sheriff Thomas Hodgson is also a Republican delegate here in St. Paul. We caught up with him outside the XL Center and asked, why chain gangs?
These individuals that work on the what we call tandem work crew are individuals that are a higher level of security, carefully screened, who volunteer to go out and do work programs in the community. My job is to do everything I can to prepare them for reentry into society.
But are they wearing shackles? Are they wearing chains?
They wear a chain, yeah. There's a chain connected to usually 4 to 5 individuals, and they learn how to cooperate and coordinate with one another, which is what we want them to learn about on the outside when they go out into the real world. They're getting thank yous from senior citizens, mayors, city councilors who are walking over, reinforcing to them that when you do good things, you get good feelings. And I want them to be programmed as best we can program them before they leave prison, that if they want to feel those things, that's how you feel them, and feeling a sense of accomplishment and achievement, and also learning to work with other people. And it's been a successful program that our critics have been very quiet about over the last 8 years.
But isn't adding chains to a jail sentence sort of like double jeopardy almost, a double punishment?
No, it's not. Actually, we have inmates that go out without restraints. We had so much work to do in our county, fixing ball fields and painting senior complexes and all of that, that we needed to go add additional inmates. And the only way we could do it was to offer it to people at a higher level of security with the understanding, if they volunteered to do this, that they had to go out with a restraint to minimize the temptation for them to take off with a longer sentence. But don't take it from me. Take it from a former inmate who served on the tandem crew. When we were on the Johnny Cochran show when he was alive, a gentleman from Amnesty International was criticizing my judgment in putting them out on restraints. And Mr. Cochran asked me, well, how do you answer that, Sheriff? And the inmate jumped in and said, can I answer that? He said, who is this man to tell me that it's better for me to sit in a 7-foot by 10-foot cell all day and not have the opportunity to go out and do good things for good people? He said, I'm going out and I'm doing good things and I feel good about it.
And but can't you go out and do good things without chains on your feet?
Not with a longer sentence. My responsibility is to be sure that I'm doing everything I can not to risk public safety by having someone with a longer sentence tempted, where the people who aren't on restraints have a much lesser sentence, time in, that they're likely not going to walk away because it's another 2.5 years. But it might be worth it for somebody that's got more time, and we don't want to expose the public to that risk or the inmate to be tempted to do that. We want to get out and don't come back.
What about the $5 a day room and board? That is being appealed. You raised how much money by charging inmates to be in jail?
In 2 years, we raised $750,000, money we could be using right now with the shortfall we have in our budget. But it's important for people who are incarcerated to know that the cost for their incarceration, which is about $35,000 a year in Bristol County, is being paid for by people who they've victimized out there in the community, and that if they have money to buy candy and cookies, they ought to be responsible for paying something for their cost of care.
And, but aren't they paying enough, some would say, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, by being in prison in the first place?
My job isn't to punish inmates. My job is to provide rehabilitative programs and things that are going to help them deal with real-life situations when they get out. But one of the things that people don't understand is if you're indigent, we still charge you $5 a day. When you leave, we give you a bill and say you owe this to the taxpayer. However, if you don't come back for 2 years, we'll write off your bill.
I understand that one of your crusades is about obesity and health and inmates, and you've been cutting back on the servings and the meals with that in mind. But why ban weightlifting? Isn't that healthy?
You can get aerobic exercise inside a prison, walking around the yard. We have a basketball court outside that they can play on. But why would we, when we're telling our kids we don't have enough money, the kids that are doing the right thing, we can't buy you weights and we don't have bleachers for your gymnasium. Your parents have to sit on the floor because we just can't afford it. But if you go down the street and steal that car, we can guarantee you can play basketball all day with a scoreboard on the wall, which we had in our place, bleachers in the gymnasium.
Have you taken the scoreboard down?
Oh, yeah. I donated that a long time ago to the Boys and Girls Club where they needed it. Gave the bleachers to a school in Fairhaven because the parents are sitting on the floor. And I told everybody, nobody's going to give you a job for improving your field goal percentage by 2 points. Look, I'm not going to have inmates in there, have taxpayers pay to bulk these people up so they can make it tougher on my officers, beat my officers up who don't have time to go to the gym because they're working double and triple overtimes. And the people who are going to get victimized on the street, if these people come out, they're going to come out stronger and maybe faster in being able to commit crimes against people. And my job is to protect the public and also to make sure inmates are focused on programs that are going to help them add tools to their toolbox that they didn't have when they came in, so they're better equipped when they leave and they don't continue to victimize people in society.
Well, before we go, I want to ask you about another issue, and that's immigration. We know you want borders secured, but what would you do about the 12 million illegal immigrants? There are many illegal immigrants in your county.
I think what we need to do with the 12 million, we have to take a hard look at who has criminal records, get them out of here. The people that have been law-abiding and have been established here for some time, you have to establish criteria. But I think one of the things that we may be able to do is to say, look, you violated the law to get here. Here's a fine. And you must get your citizenship within this window of time. If you don't, you're automatically going to be deported.
What you're saying is close to what John McCain was first proposing with others, you know, Democrats reaching across the aisle. What would you say to the right who had this huge outcry, no path to citizenship? What kind of hardship does it impose on you as a sheriff, a law and order sheriff, that there is no path to citizenship for these people?
There is a path. It's just a long path. Look, I had a family. They came from Lebanon, and they were running from Hezbollah from village to village because they were going to kill them. And they came here. They went beyond their time here, but one graduated from the Boston School of Design, one of the boys. Another one worked for an air conditioning company for 10 years. Another one was working somewhere else, and the daughter worked for Filene's, I believe. The parents were older. They had followed the laws. They all owned cars, all owned homes.
Would you send the parents back?
No, I would not, because if we know in that case that they're going back for a death sentence, it's a complicated issue.
Yeah, so you as a local sheriff are finding yourself making these Solomon-like decisions. You know who you know about this family.
They're in my facility, except for the parents. The parents are under house arrest. I had pointed out to an undersecretary who was there. We were in one of the other units. And I said, do you realize that the unit right next to the store to this detention unit, who are all detainees from INS, right next door are all prisoners from our county. People were born here in America, and they trample all over people's rights in their neighborhoods and end up here coming to jail. They get to stay here. The people who came here, who were going to be murdered over there, who came here and did all the things that we would hope every American born into our citizenship would do, they did everything we would want to do, and they're going back. We've got to find, I think, a humanitarian way to deal with it, but also without impinging our laws to a point where it's subjective and hypocritical, and that's the challenge. And Congress needs to sit down, roll up their sleeves, and deal with this issue once and for all.
Thomas Hodgson, Massachusetts Sheriff and Delegate here in St. Paul. Well, still to come, an audio postcard from the Minnesota State Fair, Food on a Stick. You're listening to Here and Now. Well, we want to take a break from the convention now to bring you the latest on a political crisis in Detroit that's finally maybe coming to an end. Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick this morning agreed to step down from office as he pled guilty to two charges of obstruction of justice. As part of the deal, the 38-year-old Democrat will spend 4 months in jail, pay $1 million in restitution, and be on probation for 5 years, during which time he will not be allowed to run for office. This all started after Kilpatrick and his former chief of staff, Christine Beatty, faced charges in March of lying under oath about an affair and their roles in firing a deputy police chief. Nolan Finley is editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Nolan, to some people, this might seem like a harsh punishment for an affair, but remind us what happened in this case.
Well, the affair itself was bad enough because it was his chief of staff, but they fired the two police officers who, in the course of another investigation, got too close to revealing the affair. And then when those officers sued, they settled a whistleblower suit for $8.4 million, including $3 million that was given to keep all of the records about the affair secret. And then, of course, they never told the city council or anyone else about this secret agreement to keep the text messages that revealed the affair from being made public.
So, as usual, the cover-up worse than the crime, and in this case, more expensive.
Entirely the cover-up, and then he compounded his problems a month or two ago when he charged out onto the porch of his sister's home and shoved a process server from the Wayne County Sheriff's Office and ended up with assault charges filed against him, felony assault, and that really was the straw that broke the camel's back. That's when the governor said enough is enough and started her removal hearings, which went on yesterday and which really did precipitate the resignation today.
Well, the mayor admitted in court today that he lied under oath. He didn't say much else, and he did sound slightly defiant at one point when answering the judge's questions about accepting the plea agreement. Let's listen.
You're also giving up the right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. You understand that?
I think I gave that up a long time ago, Your Honor, yes.
What does the mayor get out of the plea deal?
Well, he avoids one being the indignity of being removed by the governor, and that was coming up in the next day or two. But he also avoids the possibility of a much longer jail system. This sentence, this was a pretty harsh deal, $1 million restitution. Nobody knows where he's going to get that money. 4 months in jail. He has worked desperately over the last several weeks to forge a deal that didn't involve jail time, and the prosecutor wouldn't agree to that. He doesn't get much. Had he made the deal a few weeks ago, he might have gotten a much more favorable terms, but he waited way too long.
Well, Christine Beatty, the chief of staff, so far has not agreed to a plea deal. And we know she's going to appear in court on September 11th. But what happens now in Detroit, Nolan? Who takes over? Is the city going to be able to recover? They've spent 7 months.
Yeah, this was very damaging. It'll be a tough recovery. The council president takes over, Ken Cockrell. There'll be a special election within 3 months and then another general election in 9 months, and all of that will complicate the recovery of the city because you'll have a number of people who want to be mayor. And it's a real tragedy for the city because this was an extremely talented young man who had put Detroit on a very positive track, but he had a number of character flaws that brought him down in the end.
Well, he can't run for office for the 5 years of probation, but do you think he'll come back? Marion Barry of Washington, D.C. did after he served time for drug charges, bounced back. He's a city councilman now. Do you think Kilpatrick will come back?
He could come back. He's an extraordinarily charismatic person. He's an excellent politician. He has great political skills. He could come back in 5 years. You know, his mother is Congressman Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick, and he could very well come back in 5 years and run for her seat if she decides to retire. He still enjoys a good deal of popularity in Detroit. I think there was a general consensus that he ought to go, that he was damaging the city, but on a personal level, people still like him.
Nolan Finley, editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Nolan, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, tomorrow on Here and Now, John McCain speaks. Our Alaska reporter told me earlier that in Sarah Palin, Republicans have found some nuggets of gold, but in Alaska, you have to make sure there's a whole gold mine there. Well, either way, she sure is a hard act to follow. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at how John McCain did. That's tomorrow. Back in a minute, Here and Now. I'm Robin Young in St. Paul. It's Here and Now. And we think it might say something about the state of Minnesota that between the goat pens and the midway barkers at the state fair this past weekend, we were greeted thusly.
Welcome to Minnesota.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm being welcomed by a Somali American to Minnesota.
Yeah, there you go.
Minnesota is home to the largest population of Somalis in the U.S. Estimates range from 25 to 50,000 live here. We tried to bridge the language barrier with the women in head-to-toe black hijabs who cleaned the rooms at the Days Inn Motel. Then there was this family at the state fair, the mother-in-law also in full hijab, her 17-year-old grandson in Nikes. What do you think of Minnesota?
It's great. Minnesota, nice. People treat you nice. I mean, they'll tell you if you got a flat tire. It's real nice.
Everybody says the Minnesota State Fair is outrageous compared to anything else. There's nothing else like it in the world.
Well, this is the Smart Masker, and this is a self-aligning masking tape applicator.
Fish till you win. Win a nice prize every time.
Another great thing that Wildrace has to offer is nutritionally balanced. It's low in fat, low in calories, and has protein and fiber included.
What is this supposed to be?
I believe that that's wool, the Woolly the Woolly Worm. Pet him and his back will curl up.
Oh.
Oh!
Beautiful items you have here. All Minnesota wool?
All Minnesota made or Minnesota wool, yes.
So, welcome to the fair that bridges old and new Minnesota. It's been held every year, except during war, since 1854, when it was actually called the Territorial Fair. Minnesota didn't become a state until 1859. In 1901, then-Vice President Theodore Roosevelt uttered the famous phrase, "Speak softly and carry a big stick," right here. Days later, he became president when McKinley was assassinated. This year, 1.5 million people will pass through 320 acres of permanent fairgrounds here in St. Paul over 12 days. They'll try their hand at the plate smash in the midway. Well, that's the goal of this game?
Break two plates or two balls. You get one of these.
Oh, my goodness. See, new technology.
Great thing about it, same one, right back into the steel.
While holding old traditions close, meet Allison Benson. So, Allison, you, we understand, are being sculpted in butter today?
Yes, out of a 90-pound block of butter.
Allison is a member of the court of Princess Kay of the Milky Way. Princess Kay herself this year is Christy Mussman. They are daughters of dairy farmers. Their likenesses are carved in butter, and their job is to boost the industry.
Well, the dairy industry as a whole is just has great products. Dairy producers here in Minnesota, I know specifically that I know my family as well as the other 4,700 dairy farmers work so hard every day to care about the land we call home as well as all the products that hit your table every time.
It must mean a lot to both your families that you are here in butter, sculpted in butter.
It is. It's been a Minnesota tradition since 1965, and our sculpting artist, Linda Christensen, has been with us for 37 years. So being in her presence and being sculpted by her was definitely an honored tradition that I know we all are very proud to be a part of.
They're also part of an exhibit, one of the most popular at the fair. Later, hundreds will watch Linda carve out Allison.
We both are on a revolving platform inside a 40-degree glassed-in booth. I've learned a lot about the dairy farming and the kinds of families that these girls come from. They're hardworking. And talk about family values. There was one story once a girl told me that cows want to be milked at the same time every day. Her family started milking the cows a few minutes earlier every day so that their schedule would accommodate another family coming over and milking their cows after they were through doing their own cows.
So that they could come to the fair and enjoy the honor of their daughter being a princess.
So they could come to her coronation and watch her being sculpted in butter.
Do you think it looks like her?
It started to look like her, yeah, the hair.
And later that day, there they are in the butter booth, Allison wearing her tiara and a heavy fleece jacket.
What do you think of the butterheads?
I like them. They're cool.
Now, do you want to be her?
Yeah.
Well, all of this butter is making us hungry.
Who's next? What do you want, a hot dish on a stick?
Yes. Okay. Now, what exactly is this?
Hot dish on a stick. We got a meatball, a tater tot, and a meatball and a tater tot. All wrapped in a corn dog wrapper, a little cream of mushroom hamburger dipping sauce right alongside.
No, we're from Boston. Hot dish is a...
Hot dish is a, well, in other states it's called a casserole. We call it a hot dish in Minnesota.
Okay. All right, okay, here you go. I'm taking one of those.
You got it.
What is that thing?
That is an oofta.
And tell
it's
me...
a dessert.
And what is it?
Krumkaka.
What? What?
Krumkaka. It's kind of like a waffle cone type thing. That's a Norwegian dish. Filled with cheesecake, smothered in caramel... Hot, buttery, roasted pecans on top. Oofta.
We have walleye on a stick, fried pickles on a stick, pizza on a stick this year.
Spaghetti and meatball on a stick.
Spaghetti and meatball on a stick. One of the big things this year that's on a stick, very popular, is bacon on a stick.
Chocolate-covered bananas on a stick.
Pickle juice frozen in a plastic push-up sleeve and pig liquors. What's a pig liquor?
Pig liquor is a piece of bacon dipped in wonderful dark chocolate.
According to the University of Minnesota, about one-third of the state's economy is a direct result of the food and agriculture industry. Here at the fair, food is on people's minds, as is fun.
Everybody gets a free demonstration, guys. Watchy, watchy, watchy.
There was a John McCain booth where fairgoers could register to vote and possibly win a John McCain bobblehead. But by and large, politics did not have a place at this table. Are you from Minnesota?
Yes, we are.
Are you following the conventions?
Not really. We're so busy with our kids.
Hi, you guys. I'm just wondering, you've got a little one in a wagon here. Are you following politics at all?
No.
No, I don't have time, actually.
Are you also following the politics this week?
No, not really.
You, sir?
Nope.
I don't know. I've been having my mind on other things, so.
You busy?
Yeah, yeah.
No time. In a process of getting a house and everything, don't have any time for it.
Maybe it's just that summer, like the fair, is just ending, the political season about to start in earnest. But what people really did seem to care about here at the fair is their livestock. We dropped in at the swine barn, where the homegrown milking goats were being judged.
Two over three, they're just more uniform, being sharp.
What are the judges looking for?
In the milking goats, it's their udders, placement of the teeth, pretty much all kinds of things.
These are your goats that you've raised?
Yep.
You just show them. How do you show a goat?
We lead them around in front of the judge, and they judge them on their conformation.
Conformation?
Yes.
How
they're built.
Well, they are, to me, gorgeous. One is like
they are beautiful.
They are.
These are Oberhasli crossbred, so this is the recorded grade class, which means that they're not entirely Oberhasli.
Oberhasli is a
breed of goat. The does can be black like this doe on my right, or they can be the bay or chamois like the doe on the left.
Which it looks like velvet. Well, they're just beautiful. How'd you do?
Well, I'm leading. These are my daughters. I had one in this class, and mine got second place and junior champion.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What does that mean to you, by the way?
That means a lot. It's like 15 years of breeding.
Oh, you're very emotional.
Yeah, it's been a long road. But we do good. Thanks.